Hundreds of incarcerated New Yorkers in 2019 may have been unfairly punished, including time in solitary confinement and longer periods of incarceration as a result of drug tests administered improperly by prison officials, according to a recent investigation announced by the state's Inspector General's office. For more on what was uncovered, we're talking with George Franey, Acting Deputy Inspector General for the Upstate Region. Welcome to the show, George.
Glad to be here.
So what led your office to examine the drug testing policies used by the State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision for the first, say, 8 or 9 months of 2019?
Yeah, so normally, and I believe the Inspector General Lang spoke about this when you interviewed her last time, but we received complaints from a number of sources, including the general public, referrals from other state agencies. And this happened to be a referral from the Department of Corrections itself. We work very closely with their internal investigations unit. We communicate with them, and they referred to our office some complaints they were having of potential false positive drug tests that they were receiving for their incarcerated individual population.
So when you began looking into this issue, what did you uncover about the tests that were being administered by prison officials with the support of a private business called Microgenics?
Well, our primary finding is that the tests themselves are only preliminary tests. And unfortunately, it was a misrepresentation to say that the tests were acting wrong. It's more that the program itself was utilizing the tests improperly. So these are preliminary tests. The vendor themselves include in their instructions that the test must be confirmed by a more specific method. Docs, unfortunately, was not doing that, and they were relying upon old case law that our investigation found may not apply in this case for a number of reasons. So, unfortunately, the incarcerated individual population was being disciplined through solitary confinement and a number of other disciplinary measures based on a preliminary test alone.
And was this a problem across the entire prison system, or was this isolated to certain facilities?
No, this was a statewide issue. This was a program administered by DOC's central office and also at every single facility within the state.
So does that mean that the people who were administering this program and were following the improper procedures were acting in accordance with a broader department policy, or were they all just by coincidence choosing to implement decisions based solely on preliminary responses?
No, this was a broader centralized department policy. As outlined in the report, it's known as the Incarcerated Individual Drug Testing Program to test incarcerated individuals' urine for drug use violations within the prison system. So this was a central policy that was being administered at every single prison in the state.
And what's the time period we're talking about, and what's unique about this time period in particular?
The time period in which DOCS acquired Microgenics tests and services began in January of 2019. That's when they started rolling out the testing apparatuses as well as the tests themselves into DOCS facilities. Technically, the contract began and was approved in October of 2018, and that's when DOCS central office and certain personnel were revising DOCS policy before rolling out. So really, October 2018 through August of 2019. What's notable about the Inspector General's investigation is we did not limit ourselves to that time period in which Microgenics was solely the vendor. We took a deep dive and we looked as to what was happening before that as well. So just an example of how thorough our investigation was, we went back decades.
And what should prison officials have been doing in the process of administering these tests from Microgenics? I imagine the preliminary tests should have just been used as an initial finding that required some sort of follow-up?
Exactly. So what was happening was that once an inmate tested positive for some type of drug use, regardless of the type of drug, they were immediately isolated and put into segregated confinement. And what should have happened is that test result that resulted in that isolation should not have been relied upon. It should have been sent to a laboratory, either within the state or contracted outside, to confirm the results of that test. There are more specific laboratory-produced results that can identify the drug that are present in the urine samples, rather than just giving you an indication that there might be something there.
And you mentioned what this meant in the immediate aftermath for the incarcerated New Yorkers who tested positive with these preliminary tests. But can you expand a little bit on the repercussions for these people?
Beyond being immediately isolated, they would face a disciplinary hearing. And at the disciplinary hearing, they would be fighting an uphill battle. You know, I equate it to, you know, bottom of the ninth, two outs, down by 30 runs, and Mariano Rivera's on the mound. And you're trying to overcome that battle, and they just couldn't do it. And it wasn't, and they were not aided by any type of representation at the time. Our investigation also found that in some instances they were provided some misinformation. So once at the disciplinary hearing, they were fighting this large uphill battle. And then after that, they were faced with sanctions, including loss of phone calls, loss of packages, loss of commissary, not being able to meet their loved ones in the family reunion program. A number of incarcerated individuals lost out on some of the other programs they were involved in, including educational programs or shock incarceration, which potentially led to missed hearing dates for parole. And as we mentioned at our press conference when we released the report, there was one individual who had served extended time from being removed from the shock incarceration program. She likely would have completed it within 6 months and been released. However, because she was removed, she had to serve out an extra year. So there was real-life repercussions for these incarcerated individuals' freedoms.
For listeners just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're highlighting an investigation by the State Inspector General's Office into improper drug testing in the state's prison system. And our guest is George Franey, Acting Deputy Inspector General for the Upstate Region. The practice of state prison officials during this time period contributed to a spike in positive test results. What did officials in the prison system or at Microgenics who had access to this data do with it?
It went in phases. So right when, in January of 2019, when these apparatuses and tests from Microgenics were rolled out to statewide prisons, there had been an immediate, you know, outcry from some incarcerated individuals. Those incarcerated individuals had been long-term in the state prison system. They had never tested for drug use before. And yet now, with this new testing system, they were all of a sudden being accused of consuming drugs such as buprenorphine or synthetic cannabinoids. And they found this to be very problematic. In one example of how the system worked, specifically at Attica Correctional Facility, a number of the testing officers themselves recognized that, you know, this is wrong, that these incarcerated individuals had never been tested positive before, and now all of a sudden they're positive. You know, conventional thought at the time was, well, we got a more sensitive test, so that seems right. However, they ran it up the flagpole to their superintendent, who then raised the flag with central office. And central office, you know, they had to reach out to the vendor, Microgenics, and say, hey, what's going on? So there was a number of initial steps where a Microgenics technical representative actually came out to some DOCS facilities and tested the apparatus, reviewed whether the testing officers were properly performing the test, and at that level found nothing wrong. However, as the allegations of false positive tests mounted, this seemed to be a growing problem. So Microgenics requested a number of samples be sent to them. DOCS began its own internal investigation and started sending out some urine samples to other laboratories and found evidence that there was, in fact, false positive urine tests. So by September of 2019, right before the Inspector General became involved, there was a meeting between Microgenics and Department of Corrections to try to hash this out. The result of that meeting was not necessarily fruitful, and Docs subsequently referred that to our office.
In the course of your investigation, did you uncover what motivated the policy that was implemented by the Department of Corrections?
Sure. I mean, there's case law, and we mention it in our report. The site is Carranza v. Coughlin, and there's a 1986 federal case that found, you know, it did not violate due process to perform to use only these preliminary tests. However, Docs relied upon that case, and it is still good case law. However, this is an example of where the court system has not caught up to scientific advances, and our investigation found that the test relied upon in that court case was an old test. It was not the Microgenics test, and they are similar, although not the same. We've also found that at the time the case was decided, tests for buprenorphine or synthetic cannabinoids didn't even exist yet. So for a number of reasons, the reliance upon this case was problematic. There was in terms of the motivation for changing from their prior vendor to Microgenics, there was a primary concern about cost because there had been a number of procurement issues, as we detailed in our report, but also because there are new drugs that were present and being introduced into the prison system, namely buprenorphine and synthetic cannabinoids, among others. They wanted to be able to test for those in the incarcerated individual population. So they were looking for a vendor that could provide them those type of services at a better price.
So I understand the idea that the corrections officials were utilizing case law to defend or rationalize the policy of using a preliminary test result to potentially punish someone. But I guess I don't understand why they would utilize preliminary results at all as opposed to wait for more conclusive or final test results. Why did they put so much stock in those preliminary results?
I think because I cannot speak to their own motivation. We did not uncover testimony concerning, the actual motivations of why they may have overlooked this. I think it was as simple as the law allowed it, and so that facilitated the policy. And then they just moved forward with implementing that within the prison system. A major finding of our investigation is that once Microgenics was acquired, there was no substantive legal review of that precedent. We believe that had there been a substantive legal review or even a substantive scientific review prior to implementing a new vendor, it's possible that they would have flagged this issue. It's possible that they would have recognized that, hey, this is a different system. Maybe we aren't covered under the law, or maybe we should be doing confirmatory testing. It's just a lack of due diligence that almost facilitated their use of that.
And in terms of the investigation itself, what did this consist of? Was it simple, and how long did it take?
Sure. It took a couple years. There was dozens upon dozens of interviews that we reviewed, dozens of hours of hearing recordings that were on cassette tapes, which were difficult to hear. We attempted to transcribe what we could hear from those. We reviewed tens of thousands of documents, including emails and other scientific journals and other scientific reports. We interviewed many witnesses, not just those involved with the administration of the inmate incarcerated individual drug testing program, but also toxicologists. We were trying to wrap our head around how these tests worked so that way it would lead to some major findings, in which it did. So I like to say that this was a very interesting learning process for me. I never thought in my career I would be, reading scientific journals on how a drug test worked, but we did. And we thoroughly investigated this and tried to find as many facts as we could to support our conclusions. And so It was very interesting. Daily during the investigation, we didn't know whether we were going to uncover, you know, a new email that shed some light on how this was acquired, or if we were going to be able to interview somebody that was going to tell us, you know, something new. So it was a very interesting investigation.
And is this what your job is like 24/7, or does this represent one of the more exciting and interesting chapters of your career?
This is certainly a one-off, and I'm glad to say that it is. Hopefully, under Inspector General Lang, there aren't this many investigations where we discover there are due process issues concerning freedoms of individuals. However, daily, we do this type of work. Daily, we have, anywhere between, 5,000 and 10,000 complaints coming in yearly, and daily those are assigned to investigative counsel to figure out, right, to find the facts and see what's going on to support if there's anything wrong, and see how the Inspector General can help clean up these issues within the state.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with George Franey. He's the Acting Deputy Inspector General for the Upstate Region. George, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it, too.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.